latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Open up your heart, what do you feel? Open up your heart, what do you feel? Is it real? Yeah. The Big Bang may be a million years away. Oh. But I can't figure out a better time to say.
We're back at the races. Bob Sinclair, and for those that, you know, that aren't involved, you know, deeply in the game, you know, you might be casual fans, you might enjoy, you know, coming to the track, you might listen to the show because it, you know, it's just it's a connection to racing, and it, if you need to understand and want to have a comprehension of what this industry is and why it's different, why outside interests will never understand it. All you have to do, and will have to do, is listen to those 25 minutes with John Mazza, who, as you heard, has been getting on horses and around horses for 78 years, since he was 4 years old. And this is all he knows and all he's interested in knowing. You can tell he's 82 years old and is as excited and enthralled with what's going on right now with horologists and with the two-year-olds that are coming down the pipeline as he was, obviously, as a teenager. If you aren't inspired and just captivated by a voice like that, that just is the embodiment of the lifestyle of people working, I'll say the thoroughbred industry, but it's just as true in every other, you know, equine sport breed. And this, and it's something that just has to be trotted out and displayed to these people that somehow think they're speaking for the animal. People like John Mazza speak for the animal. Better than anybody that thinks they're defending the rights and interests of the equine athlete. I mean, that was just heroic, what you just heard from him. Unbelievable. Sid Fernando standing by. Sid understands, and Sid has spent his life around the horsemen and breeders and people dedicated to this industry. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'll tell you what. After that, I don't even realize I can't see with one eye. I'm feeling better and better every day, and you know, getting back to the show last Thursday. It's a week now with today's show. I'm feeling better. I wish I could be at the track for longer stretches than I've been able to be so far. But you know, Friday and Saturday, I'm hoping I can, you know, get full days in, particularly Saturday. You got a Travers Day that's going to be terrific.
I'm amazed at the amount of reading you've been doing.
You know what's funny about it? It's funny you say that. It what's weird is, you know, first of all, when you're laying on your side for 2.5 weeks, what else am I going to do? I mean, there's only so much, you know, we watched the entire, Tina and I was nice enough to sit with me. We watched every single one of the Great British Baking Shows, 5 seasons worth. And you know, after a while, you know, you just get sick of it. But, you know, I could at least, you know, put the computer on its side and scan stuff and read stuff. And then on my phone, you know, laying there. So, yeah, I've also adjusted. What's amazing to me is, and they talk, you know, I know they talk about they say it's nonsense about, you know, people that lose their sight or born without sight, and that all the other senses are heightened. They say that that's not true, but I will tell you that the brain has been able to adjust to only reading with one eye. That it's trickier than you would think. It's with every passing day, it's gotten easier and easier for me to look at PPs and you know, write stuff and do all that. Well, plus the other part was, for the first 2 weeks, I couldn't really sit upright for more than 15, 20 minutes at a time. So because of what's going on with this gas bubble and holding the retina in place and so on forth. Yeah. Well, plus I would get nauseous and dizzy and a headache. So I would immediately have to lay back down. So I could only really sit upright for, you know, 15 minutes before saying, you know, I'm not feeling good. But it with every passing day, it's alleviating and improving.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So another month or so, I'll be.
Are you lying down right now?
No. I thought about it. It's funny you say that. I thought about doing that. I thought about Tina got me this massage table because at first the speculation was I was going to have to be one of those people that laid flat down, face down.
Uh-huh. Right.
But then where the where they attached things and where they put the bubble in, they said you need to be on your right side. So it was a little easier than.
But that's not good for indigestion.
It's funny how it's amazing
that's
say that.
That's the worst side for indigestion. You should always lay on your left side.
Well,
so you've got a heartburn.
It's so funny you say that because that was a problem for about the first 10 days. I would eat because you could eat normally, but I was immediately, very quickly suffering from heartburn. It's funny you say that, Sid.
Oh, I've cured a lot of people from that problem, Steve, by just having them flip over to the
left side.
Nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The things you learn on this show—it just—it's unbelievable.
Yeah. If you've got acid reflux, got heartburn.
Go to your
left side. Don't go to the doctor. Don't take medication. I've cured about, I would say, conservatively 13 to 15 people that
unbelievable.
Call me Dr. Fernando now.
Dr. Fernando, absolutely. Yeah. The pedigree doctor, too, as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we missed talking to you the last 2+ weeks, and we missed completely the sale, and that will make up for that a little bit, certainly in September with Keeneland. But let me get some thoughts from you. What went on?
The sale was all about Curlin, really.
Yeah,
Curlin. Yep. Curlin had not only the three highest prices, one co-tied with Tappet, but he had two colts for $1.5 million, then of course he had the colt for $1 million and Tappet had the colt for $1 million, but even more than that, Steve, he had 9 horses at $500,000 or more, just completely dominated the proceedings. And, once he went to Hillendale, it was only a matter of time before these guys were, John Segura and his guys were going to, get the best mares possible for this horse. These are results from that.
The first night you had the two Tappets that kind of drove things and established a nice day one benchmark. But then, as you say, Curlin absolutely takes over and drives this sale yet again to record numbers, Sid. And yes, we know that the top end, the elite side of things is strong. And Keeneland will be, the next barometer of the middle market and below. But, given some negative headlines the first half of the year, this was a pretty important, along with the July sale, this was a pretty important bellwether to see if the big names, if the big participants were still going to be, as active. And not only were they, it seemed like there was a very wide array of buyers on the bench.
Very true. You still got people partnering up on some horses.
Yes.
There's a great array of buyers, and you've got some people like Peter Brandt's been active all over the place, not only here but Europe. So what you're getting, Steve, in Peter Brandt's case, he's re-entered in recent years. He's had tremendous success, and he continues to support the high end. But you've got, a lot of people coming out of the woodwork that I haven't seen in some time as well. And then you've got, your international guys like Coolmore, You know, they've got Kenny McPeak has been kind of reinvigorated, buying at the higher end. Donato Rani is buying for a group, you know, very different. Of course, Donato's with Ellendale, but he's buying for several different buyers, including the Scott Hyder. He bought that Tappet you were talking about for $950,000. On the international side, you've got Terry Radcliffe was prominent. You know, Team Cassie has been buying all over the place. Donato Rani also bought, for example, you know, he buys for Bob.
This is true.
Bob Baffert. Yeah, exactly. It's true. That's right. And then, you know, you have people like Charles Weber was involved. You've got a new partnership. Well, it's not a new partnership. The Justify Ownership Group has kind of splintered into two different types of partnerships. One now, the main partnership back then was China Horse Club, Windstar, and SF Bloodstock. Windstar, of course, was because of the way they like to structure it, they were holding majority interest in those horses. Well, since the Justify deal and everybody made money after that, what's happened is China Horse Club and Windstar are still buying together. But another group has come out, and that's SF Bloodstock with Starlight and Saul Kuhlman, Matticat Stables. So that's been a new element, a new partnership that started out. And of course, SF made good money on that deal, as did China Horse Club and Windstar, and Starlight, Jack Wolf, and Matticat, Saul Kuhlman were minority partners in Justify because they leased the racing rights of SF. They didn't make the money that the other guys did, the primary partners, when they sold Justify, but they got the glory and they got the excitement, and now they're in with SF. And Donato Rani, tying back in, is buying for them as well. So it's interesting how, in fact, Pioneer of the Nile called for $625. Here's the listed here, the Donato Rani agent for SF Bloodstock, Starlight, and Matticat. So Mrs. Chu, Donato is buying for SF Bloodstock, Starlight, and Matticat. Scott Hyder, you know, as well as Baffert. And so it's interesting how it's all working out.
You know, you mentioned some of the individual buyers, and I do want to address the partnership ties. But there's a couple of individual buyers that you know, it's always interesting what the some of the backstories are, and that includes, you mentioned Charlotte and that Curlin filly that she bought out of Kateri, and it's really the second dam that is even more interesting. Sue's Good News, the dam of Tismas Sue, and this is you know, also the family, obviously, a Bulletin, you know, because of that, and more. You go back a little further, and Mochilla, the fourth dam is Cosine's sister. This feels for Charlotte, who's had a series of good males. This kind of feels like a dynamic shift. This is obviously a filly that she's buying with long-term, you know, down-the-road, post-career thoughts about her broodmare band. And it feels like that she's thinking along those lines. And, you know, because she hasn't been buying a lot of runners. She's been producing, you know, from the farm in Florida, and this is an augmentation. But I got the sense immediately, because this was a departure for her to go buy a filly like this. I got the sense that she's kind of underpinning her broodmare band down the road.
Yeah, no, that's obviously the type of mare that's going to, you know, especially if she does something, she's a broodmare in the making, no question about it.
The other name that, as an individual buyer, although Peter Brandt did partner up, I think, with Coolmore, did he not, on a high purchase? Yeah, the American
and
Pharaoh.
He's done that before, yeah. He's done that before, obviously.
The 800,000 one out of Super Majesty.
Yes, White Birch Farm and MV Magna, yes, exactly.
I got to tell this story because, you know, I saw some of the ridicule and, you know, some of the consternation online about the dominant presence of Chad Brown's operation.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that don't seem to want to understand that this whole business is an organic entity, you know, that everything is interwoven. Peter Brandt had been gone, and you and I, even maybe 4 years ago or so, before he kind of came back, maybe with you and with Andy, I know, asked the question, you know, where is Peter Brandt? Why is Peter Brandt not, you know, he loved the game and had a lot of success. Why is he not involved? We were asking about, you know, where can we get owners? Well, when Peter Brandt decided to come back, he wanted to, you know, send some horses to Chad Brown and had no intention of coming back to the level of involvement that he's come back to.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can be, you know, have all the frustration or consternation you want. But in fact, Chad Brown and the success that he's authored for Peter Brandt has resulted in Brandt, who originally thought he might come back with three or four horses, would maybe just dabble again, and now has got over 100 horses in training, is back spending, you know, big numbers, is buying Payson Park. He's come back at a bigger level than he ever had in his heyday, and that's to the greater good of the entire industry. And you have to understand this and take these kinds of things. You know, you have to look at the broad horizon. You know, not in little micro, you know, little microfilm moments.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I mean, when he this American Pharaoh, by the way, got us on this subject. It's not surprising he partnered with Coolmore on this horse because he currently races the American Pharaoh group horse, Monarch of Egypt, in Europe with them. And of course, you'll note that when Monarch of Egypt went down very closely in the Group 1 Phoenix to the Jetmon horse, American viewers would have noticed the colt was in Branch Green Silks. You're right. Brandt, a couple of things happened with Brandt. One is his cousin is Joe Allen. Joe Allen, of course, Warfront most recently. And Joe Allen obviously had a relationship with Coolmore because Coolmore was very heavily into Warfront, and so they started to partner on some horses. Coolmore must have bought some shares because they breed heavily to Warfront. And when Peter Brandt really decided to get into it, it was in Europe, and he started buying a lot of the brood mares from the dispersal of the Wilderness Fans. So, and who he was friends with, and in fact, one of his earliest successes was when he got Weah from them, and she was a champion for him. So, as you point out, this newfound success has really got him going. I mean, he's done extraordinarily well. I mean, he won the French Derby this year in Europe. People might not be aware of that. Sopsis is a half brother to Sister Charlie. He's not just with Chad Brown, but with Chad Brown here. You know, it's really fueling even more success begets success, and that's what's happened.
You look at these results, and obviously we'll see, you know, about Keeneland, you know, where we're going to get a much bigger, deeper picture of the health of, you know, the bloodstock market. But, you know, I saw international buyers. You mentioned Kerry Radcliffe. I saw where the Koreans, you know, the Koreans are spending more and more money. You know, they had that period where they just were, they were stocking their racetrack operations, you know, with $30,000 horses. Then they upped it to 50 to 60. Now it's even up further. But I also see that they're buying individuals for the mid six figures.
Yeah, and throw in another international buyer, if we could call him that, because it's primarily based. But Jugmont Farms bought its kids now for $600,000.
No, and they're it's going to be very interesting for them actually when we see the produce of Arrogate and how, you know, how that influences things. And I, and you know, frankly, they've got a big, and we're going to morph this conversation into a Travers discussion, but you know, Sid, here's Tacitus, who, you know, once he, you know, fills out his resume, augments his resume, and the big opportunity coming obviously Saturday, Judmont, you know, we discussed it in advance of Arrogate going to stud, but they're a very, you know, quiet and steady emergent North American, you know, farm opportunity here. Think about Tacitus, you know, standing with Arrogate for them.
Such an attractive stallion prospect to begin with. I mean, not only is he a son of Tappet, but and of course out of U.S. champion Crows Hatches. But this family, Steve, I mean, it's the best in show family, and it's one of the best in the stud book. It's a family known for producing speed horses as well as classic horses, like El Gran Senor, for example. It's a fabulous family, and this horse, you know, he's really bred for 10 furlongs, and he'll get that opportunity here. Tappet, of course, the success he's had with Belmont winners is known. But it's only, you know, I think it's just a matter of time before he gets, you know, I think he's bound to get a Derby winner down the road. And, you know, this horse is looking extremely promising for this race. Had a bad trip last time and still closed really well. I think the winner tax of the last race, I think he's also, the two of them, I think, Steve, have two of the best pedigrees for the Travers. Tax, of course, by Arch from that great, great family up front. Of course, people will recognize Wild Applause, the Third Dam, but this is a family of La Troyenne, and you know, he's a gelding tax, but you know, he's a horse that is really bred for this trip and more. He's by Arch out of the Giants Causeway Mare. He's got, you know, a lot of speed, but he stays, and I think he's going to be, a contender here as well.
Yeah, he did draw the 12 hole, and yeah, that forces their hand. I mean, they're right, going to have to go. There isn't a ton of front end parties signed on here. That's one of the things that Maximum Security not coming, that, you know, kind of threw this into a little bit of a quandary from a speed standpoint. But him drawing outside and having maybe two or three horses that at least are going to want to be forwardly placed inside of him, that may prompt the pace a little bit. That's the one thing that has happened here. So to get to the turn without, you know, being four wide is going to be their objective immediately when the gates open. But listen, you got to ride Ortiz Jr. That should go a long way to, you know, to mitigating that challenge.
Yeah, no question about it. There's two horses in here that are kind of bred. It's a lesson in whether you send a stamina line to or more stamina to a speedier horse, or whether you send speedier mares to a stamina horse, and those two examples are Owendale by Into Mischief, who's primarily sprinters and milers, but this particular colt is out of a Bernardini mare. And if you've been following Bernardini's exploits at stud, he's already got six Grade One winners as a broodmare sire, including Peter Brandt's Dunbar Road, who won at a mile and a quarter here at Saratoga, as well as Catholic Boy, a Travers winner at a mile and a quarter. In fact, to give you an example, and I don't have it in front of me, but I'm just off memory, out of those six, the minimum distance they've won is 9 furlongs. And that's Serengeti Empress and Motown. They've won at 10 furlongs and up, including that horse, but it was a Tis Wonderful horse. It was a speed, precocious horse, and Bernardini got this horse to get, I think, 11 furlongs. So what Bernardini is doing is he's adding a lot of stamina, as he himself was, the son of AT&D, his family. And although the female family is very good and it includes more spirit and stellar wind in it, the way this horse runs, he's a horse that, you know, may very well get a piece of it. So that's that example of that. Contrast that to Steve's Code of Honor by Noble Mission, Frankel's full brother. Noble Mission has two graded winners so far. This horse and a horse in Europe, abroad, who won at 13 furlongs. Noble Mission himself obviously stayed a mile and a half really well. So what you do here is you breed a mare by Dixie Union. The next dam of that mare is by Mount Livermore, Speed Horse. Next dam after that is by Bull Forbes. Although he was a Derby winner and a Belmont winner, he was known as a Speed Horse. And so there's a lot of speed in that family. A good combination of stamina and speed. So I think, Code of Honor and Owendale are also pretty live in this race.
We have this conversation every year, and we didn't get a chance to talk ahead of the Alabama, but I made the point, said that, when it came to the Phillies, that, there isn't the same focus on the 10 furlongs for them for whatever reason, leading up to Derby. That's all we talk about. And then here's the Alabama last week, first and probably in a lot of cases only time that those fillies are going to go 10 furlongs. There is the Delaware handicap opportunity for them, each summer. But the same thing is slightly, to a lesser degree when it comes to Travers, because invariably there's horses from the Triple Crown season, and so there's an easy reference back to the mile and a quarter. And of course, we're also in the shadow of the Pacific Classic this past Saturday, another race where, there were older horses in some cases trying a mile and a quarter for the first time. But this is an interesting equation, the Travers, every year, because there's horses who were on a different development curve that may have missed the Triple Crown season. And it makes it just as compelling to look at these pedigrees and look at running styles to try to figure out who's, you know, who's going to stay on.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, Code of Honor, you know, was put up the third in the Derby. And wasn't Owendale third in the Preakness?
Second, Owendale. Third was Dale's. Or no, Dale was second? Dale was second.
Yeah, so it was Everfast and then Owendale. But it was a nose separating the two.
Right. Yes, yeah. They were. That's right.
So you know, look at Owendale. His running style, he comes from far back. You know, I mentioned this in a couple of tweets, but Into Mischief has been bred to more and more stamina pedigrees. In fact, the half to Cambier Park that's going to be for sale in September is by Into Mischief. So you see the types of pedigrees he's getting now. Not only are they better, but they're longer. And if you look at Owendale, he's not a typical Into Mischief, is he? I mean, he's a horse that that broke his maiden at a mile instead of five furlongs. He's a horse that has was beaten only a length and a quarter in the Preakness, and in his last three starts, he's won the Ohio Derby at a mile and an eighth, and the Lexington at a mile and a 16th. Very atypical of an Into Mischief, but probably we'll be seeing more of those types of Into Mischiefs in the future. This is not a Covfefe Into Mischief, you know, or as a sprinter, or a miler type of Into Mischief. This is a staying Into Mischief.
Some of the other horses that nosed around, you know, you talk Owendale and Everfast. The horse that is not dirtied even up. I don't want to even use that term, but Laughing Fox. And I granted, I'm kind of a rooting here because I think so highly of the Lieblongs, but Laughing Fox was making up tons of ground in the Preakness late and ended up fifth, beaten less than four for everything. And then he ran that even race in the Jim Dandy, which, you know, just by virtue of the smallish field, you know, the six horse field and, you know, and the fact that, 48 plus for the half, it just was not going to give him a chance. And there isn't necessarily enough pace to set him up. But he's a Union Rags out of the Stormy Atlantic mare, and every indication is that this is one of those horses that wants every bit of a mile and a quarter. And, you know, steady 24 and change, 24 and change. You know, he doesn't even have necessarily a big close. I mean, people think it's a big close because he comes from further back, but that's because everybody else is stopping and he's running on at one pace. I would love to see him impact this race.
Union Rags, he's got four grade one winners. He's sire of Catalina Cruiser right now. Very big horse. Obviously, ran well in the Belmont. And he has a lot of latent stamina, I've noticed, in his offspring. They tend to be horses that very similar to this keep going, you know, and so you're right. You know, there's a lot of stamina in that pedigree.
Give us a quick read on a couple of horses that jumped into this fray kind of late. Scars Are Cool for Sagamore and Stanley Huff. He's a Malibu Moon out of a More Than Ready mare. He kind of feels like a very strong middle distance pedigree, but you know, they're running out of three-year-old restricted opportunities at this level, and things, you know, with Global Campaign, you know, always felt like that he wasn't hitting it on the screws on his way to a potential chance. And then Mucho Gusto, who, you know, a lot of people are going to just assume that Baffert is just throwing in because game winner, you know, ends up getting sick. However, he's going to be, you know, making a mile and a quarter debut. He's Mucho Macho Man out of a Giants Causeway, Mayor, and there's nothing there that says a mile and a quarter won't work for him.
Yeah, well, let's go with Scars and Cool. As far as the Malibu Moon out of a More Than Ready, Mayor, you know, he's only had three starts, but he wanted a mile and an eighth here. You know, you take a shot with the big gun, it's not going. Probably needs some seasoning, but they feel he can get the trip based on the performance last time. I'd say he's, you know, he's probably up against it here. But the other Colt you mentioned, oh, he's legit. I mean, ran a huge race with Maximum Security last time. It just seems to me, though, Steve, that even though he's out of a Giants Causeway, Mayer, the way he battles and runs and evolves fairly early, and you know, I hate to go up against Bob Baffert, but I just have a feeling, unless he's just got a huge class edge, I think he may not see the whole trip. So chance to be around for it, but just based on my gut feeling versus the price, I think. And he's one of those horses, by the way, that could challenge up front early, too. Obviously, could be part of the pace scenario early. And Tacitus and some of these horses have a shot, I think, to close on this track far better than they've had the opportunity to do before with this trip. This track tends to be very stamina-oriented at a mile and a quarter, more so than the Derby. So I think the more stamina that you have in the Travers, I think it's a better piece of equipment, a weaponry in your arsenal. And Mucho Gusto seems to be like a really, really tough horse at a mile and a 16th. He's yet to win at a mile and an eighth, and say mile and a quarter on a track that I think needs more stamina than usual might be a tough assignment for him.
I also want to add in endorsed here as well, the Battaglia d'Oro for Godolphin out of the lovely dance card, the Tappet mare, and he's getting his audition at a mile and a quarter, too. And I didn't know what to really expect from him in that Curlin, but I thought he ran very well, and he goes back to Rosario, who won with him going three quarters. And you know, if there's a mid-pack stalk-and-go horse in here, that, you know, that might be the right price. It endorsed being from the 11 hole. I imagine that, you know, Rosario will just sort of drift to find a spot to drop in before the turn. He does that so well. And endorsed has tactical speed. I it's funny. I never mid-August or you know, leading into this after the Jim Dandy, I never would have thought that I might end up, you know, picking a horse like endorsed in this race. But there's a real chance that once I see all the numbers, you know, on the page tonight,
yeah.
I may end up picking him, Sid. And I don't know what I surprised myself last night. The more I was perusing the, you know, I just have to use the nomination PPs.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're going with some recency and grade one vibes. Look no further than this past weekend, where two Grade 1 winners arrived, including at a mile and a quarter, for the sire, Medallia Zorro. The winner of
That's right. That's Classic true. That's
and
right.
Anvier Park.
That's right.
This is a horse that gets mile and a quarter horses. He's out of a tap it there. You know, it seems like the intentions are pretty good here, I think, to take a shot with this horse on this track. And why not? He ran a great race in the Curling last time out, just to get some experience. I was on a muddy track. But pedigree-wise, he's certainly a pedigree play, and I think for the price you're getting, I don't think you're crazy at all.
All right, you convinced me. I'm probably going to make this the Beat Pick Challenge race. Everybody's going to be excited about Travers for Saturday, and so that's one of the reasons that I dove in last night off of the PPs that were offered. You know, you just had the nomination PPs. We won't see them, with numbers and shoulder to shoulder order until later today, after the rest of this great card gets drawn, including the Jerkins and the Ballerina, two of our favorites every summer here, and then the turf races. The turf is getting its share now of moisture, because it is pouring yet again after a series of thunderstorms this morning. It's not going to be a pleasant day at Saratoga today, unfortunately, for those that are starting their Travers week. But, Sid, the summer's rolling by fast here, and this is always one of those moments, when you get to Travers Saturday, you say, okay, summer is essentially, you can see the finish line when you hit the Travers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, listen, my best for continued and quick recovery. We need your eye back.
two is better than one when it comes to eyes, eyes and ears and hands. I appreciate it, Sid. And of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and we're looking forward to September. The catalogs came out. I see everybody getting hernias picking up their catalogs, the six books.
We're working on that sale right now. In fact, we do a best of sale, our short list, so been swamped.
Nice.
Been swamped on that, but hopefully get some of this work out of the way, and we'll look forward to chatting next week.
Without fail, 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111. Work Thoroughbred Consultants. And as Sid just said, they're perusing the catalogs and the Keeneland sale, the big box store of yearlings. And if you're thinking of getting in, or if you need another pair of eyes and added expertise, Sid and his team happy to help you pick out some yearlings at Keeneland coming up now in just really a couple of weeks and change. Sid, best wishes. We will talk next week.
Absolutely. Talk to you later, Steve.
I appreciate it. Sid Fernando, everybody, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by John Secura and the Hill and Dale team. You mentioned Donato and Jared Burdine and everybody at Hill and Dale, and they're getting ready too. And haven't really looked yet at the consignment, but we'll certainly talk to John ahead of Keeneland. Didn't get a chance, obviously, with my situation. Didn't get a chance to talk to him ahead of Saratoga, but Keeneland coming up fast. Let's fill out the last hour of the Wednesday get-together, and Seth Merrow. Let's get to Seth. I haven't talked to Seth on the radio. We were together on Sunday for TV, which was fun. We had a really, really nice Sunday. It felt good. That felt good to get back in front of the camera with Seth. We had Gary Gullo, and I want to thank everybody that came out for the Lustgarten Foundation fundraiser. And those of you that we raised almost 1,000 on my little, I threw together a Facebook donate the day that we had the listing the other day when I had the listing. And I mentioned on Friday when I mentioned the fundraiser and the trainer autograph session, I put up a little Lustgarten Foundation, and we raised $900, I think, $870. I haven't checked. I didn't check yesterday, but we raised almost $1,000. So thanks to, I think, 12, 13 people donated. Really nice. Gullo himself and Alan Clanfer. Thanks to Alan down in Louisiana. And who else? Ray Amato, Ferrier to the Stars, and others. Thanks to everybody who contributed. Really appreciate it. And all of you came out on Sunday for Dominic. Who else? Mike Welch was with us, and we got some advanced Travers stuff in. Seth Merrow next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Fun in the Sun is Express Vet's summer treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the turf meets the surf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with Express Vet. And while you're at it, don't miss Express Bet's $120,000 Fun of the Sun Handicapping Competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $5,000 for first, $2,000 for second, $1,000 for third, and $500 for fourth. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win a Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seat, a $12,000 value each. ExpressBet account holders register free once to play all summer. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool, fun-in-the-sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet, Saratoga, and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun-in-the-sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
She's coming over, we'll go out walking, make a call on the way. She's in the phone booth now, I'm looking in, there comes a smile. Some the same stuff we got yesterday. There's still some of the same stuff we got yesterday. Yeah.
We're back at the races. little bit past 10 into hour 3. Some lemon heads. Yeah, that's right. I added Drug Buddy to the rotation. I'm sorry. I hope nobody's offended. I've always loved it. If you don't know the Lemonheads, it's about as great an album. It's a Shame About Ray. If you've never heard it, seek it out. We're seeking out Seth Merrow.
Good morning.
I was going to say, usually if he's there, he pops up like a jack-in-the-box. Good morning.
Good morning. Timing was perfect. The phone rang literally as I ended my show. We went a little over today. Yeah.
You went over? And I wasn't on the set?
Yes, I'm getting bad habits from you.
Well, to be honest, anything you went on today, I mean, this is it pouring there like it's pouring here again?
Middle of the show, I had Larry Comas on this morning, and I worried, there was a moment where I worried whether we could be heard over the rain hitting the tent. There was about 5 minutes where it was torrential, but right now it's not raining.
It got dark again here. It didn't get so dark that we couldn't take a photograph, but it was plenty dark, and the skies opened up again. I mean, this has been relentless since about 5 a.m. here. Crazy.
Yeah, and it's been the same down here. The front door to the control room trailer was unusable, so we had to go in the back door because there was a little lake there. The little tunnel over the Clare Court is full of water. For the first show, the handicapping show, it was fine. And then, as I say, about the middle of my second 10 to 11 show, there was about 15 minutes where it was biblical, but it has stopped again now.
Well, see, as Seth lays out his schedule, you get the sense that this is why he's the face of GoTV, because he's on virtually every hour. There's no Capital OTB programming without Seth.
And that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it so much fun.
You're so upbeat. It's remarkable. I mean, because maybe you're a beneficiary as well of the extra day off, because I don't know how you do it, honestly. I don't know how you put up with me on Sundays.
I do. I will say it was a different dynamic the 2 weeks you weren't in here, but not a good dynamic. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying different. I was happy to have you back on Sunday, as we all were, and the viewing public as well.
I'm very kind. People have been so nice. And by the way, speaking of something different, one thing you and I did not get a chance to talk about Sunday, because we had a full show with Michael Dubb and Mike Welch and Gary Gullo. But one thing you and I that really was good fodder typically for you and me, the jockey introduction controversy. How there could be a controversy about something like this, it gives you an indication of how ridiculous the race-watching public can be. Because that there would be people outraged over the absolutely ridiculous and whimsical, fireworks, pyrotechnic introduction of the jockeys. What was your take? I mean, and why do you think some people are outraged?
Well, aren't people just kind of outraged automatically on Twitter? Isn't there in social media? Isn't there an outrage brigade that just kind of, I want to be the first to relay my outrage and see how many likes I get? So I think that plays into it. Someday we should have a whole discussion about social media and why I hate it. But I think that played into it. And I think also people, I mean, you alluded to it. Wasn't everybody's tongue firmly in their cheek on that? And I don't think people got that. I got a couple of texts when it was happening, and because I was at the track, I wasn't watching, but I got a couple of texts, oh, this is kind of cute with the jockeys, and I wasn't sure what they were referring to. I didn't really realize it until maybe an hour or so later, and then pulled up the replay, and yeah, it was fun. It was just, like I say, I think it was tongue-in-cheek, and it was kind of having fun with the situation. So why were people outraged?
That was my question. I thought it was so amusing and so clever that they would do something like that. And I'm amazed, in fact, on the front where people, all we hear is how, you know, racing should try to be more like the other major sports. I go to Philadelphia Eagle games and the starting 11, offense or defense, gets introduced very much the same way. There's the tunnel, and there's the music, and there's the You know, the green and white pyrotechnics, and the players come running through the tunnel, and it's a, you know, the smoke machine. What possible harm was there? And you could tell the jocks got a kick out of it. They looked like they loved it.
And also, we talk oftentimes, and I think justifiably so, that we should promo more the human side of the game and let people learn more about the trainers and the jockeys. And I think that just helped that effort as well, kind of introduced by name the human players in the upcoming race. And so to me, it was one of those things that not just worth a try. I think it was a good try. It wasn't a single. It wasn't necessarily a grand slam, but I'd make it a double or a triple.
Good. All right. You and I hadn't talked about it separately. Andy and I did it come up with Andy yesterday on the air? Did I bring this up with Andy? I don't think I did. I don't think we got around to it because I only had a 20-minute window with Andy yesterday. This is, as we indicated, a very busy time for you. So you probably did not hear yesterday's last 33 minutes, 35 minutes. I played the interview we did with Jack Whitaker, Seth, from 2012. And that was the last segment yesterday. And if you didn't hear it the first time, or if you had forgotten about it, I think you'd enjoy it, but some thoughts. You're somebody that can appreciate what Jack Whitaker, as a broadcaster, and how much he meant to people like, you know, of our age.
Yeah, I've talked to some people, including David O'Rourke and Tony, the VP over there, about the Fox MSG show, and I mentioned, you know, I think it's kind of a 21st century version of what we kind of got up here with WORTV, the New York station, when they had that Saturday half-hour show that you caught the last two races of NYRA tracks, and kind of pulled me into the game. And that was Frank Wright and Charles C. Canty, and I can remember them and remember what they looked like and remember what they sounded like on those shows. And Jack Whitaker is clearly one of the same kind of guys. You can easily picture him. When the name comes up, you can picture him. You can hear his voice. And for somebody of my age, I remember Jack vividly on the sports side and what he did and being a talented guy in what he did. But then over on the horse racing side, obviously a lot of participation in that as well. And as I say, I can easily picture him. I can easily hear him. And for folks who aren't familiar with that, you can go to YouTube and pull up some of those old, you know, clips of Jack covering horse racing and get a sense of how important he was to not just sports in general, but certainly horse racing and the coverage of that back in his time. Yeah, he's one of those guys that, again, to me, you can say iconic, and it doesn't necessarily fit. It's an over-description to some people. But I think with a guy like Jack Whitaker, it fits because, again, as soon as you say his name, I can easily picture and hear him.
You know, last night, Johnny DeSantis sent me, and Johnny and I talked about him on Monday, but Johnny sent me a really nice 2-minute and something clip, which was sort of a compendium, a compiling of Whitaker sound bites, some short and, you know, some a little bit more extended. And I remarked to Johnny that I got plenty of feedback yesterday, and sometimes it takes a day or two to get all the feedback collected to the show because some people, you know, are a day behind and they listen to the podcast and they listen to the archive, they listen to the replay. You know, a lot of people will only hear, let's say, you know, 8 o'clock this morning till 9:30. You know, so they'll hear, you know, half of the show live and part of it from the day before. So there are a lot of people probably heard the Jack Whitaker piece this morning for the first time too. And I was surprised. I mean, I got quite a bit of feedback, and I was surprised though that there wasn't a little bit wider amount of feedback. And I said to Johnny, it occurs to me that you've got to be.
Yeah.
You've got to be at least 50, I suppose. 40, 46, 48 and older. There's probably a 20-year, you know, call it 18 to 40, that never saw Jack live watching an event. And that that was sort of eye-opening, frankly, to me last night as I thought about that. For us of a certain age, he's just synonymous with the sports that we enjoy growing up, and a certain, you know, that's part of that conversation I had with him about how coverage has changed and how he was absolutely, you know, cognizant, and not just cognizant, but I think respectful of the innovations. I mean, some would call it might be innovative. Doesn't make it an advance in the coverage, but I could tell he was listening to it again yesterday. He was very respectful of what the modern sports broadcast has become. He did not have any critique really of it. But it is amazing to me that, you know, there might be 25 years worth of sports fans that never saw him live.
Yeah, and as I say, a person my age remembers him well with the broadcast, but yeah, it's two decades probably since that's been prominent. I mean, Jim McKay, probably right in the same boat. To me, he's somebody I remember vividly. From not just horse racing broadcasts, obviously, but from sports in general. But he's a similar type of, I think there's a certain age range where you get much beyond, and that they're not going to remember Jim McKay either. So I think Jack Whitaker is right in that ballpark.
Hmm. Yeah, and Howard and others, you know, when I put up those pictures from Baltimore every year, you know, that it's really that era. There's actually, my friend Chuck on Facebook, Chuck McNamara, sent me a link this morning. I haven't looked at the Thoroughbred Daily News yet today, but apparently I only pulled up the link. Speaking of, you know, being of a certain age, Bill Finley caught up with Shecky Green, who is playing the races on a daily basis in Vegas. He hangs out at a couple of sports books, and I got a big kick out of it. I got to read the whole article, but so there you go. There's another era. You know, you got to be a certain age to know that name.
Well, and folks who still are watching Odd Couple reruns, if you're not old enough, you may not know that Jack Klugman was a big player of the game, and not a big player of the game, but had a couple of big horses during his ownership career as well.
You bet. You bet. Well, I'm looking forward to reading that piece because I always loved although you don't see him as much, but or much at all.
His namesake horse was talented, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And pretty funny. I don't know how we went off in this direction using Jack Whitaker. Did you go to the draw last night?
I did. Very well attended. Very well attended. I mean, the little courtyard with the draw was wall-to-wall. And then there's the second little courtyard that was full. There was an inside area that was full. And it was pretty much all the connections, certainly the major trainers, except for Baffert, obviously. But the major trainers were all there. A lot of the owners were there. Dean Reeves and Randy Hill were there. And it was a fun event. I mean, the game plan has been to bring it these draws, though the Whitney, which was over at Sperry's, and the Travers, which the last couple of years has been at the Adelphi, to kind of bring it downtown and mingle the track in downtown. I think they did that successfully yesterday. Was a little bit crowded, but it was a good event with all the major players showing up, and Andy interviewed all of them. And folks may have read comments subsequently, but I'll reiterate, it was funny when Danny Gargan got up there, he said, "I'm going. I got the 12 posts, so if anybody else is going, I'm going." Somebody tweeted last night to me, "Where's the speed in the race?" And, well, it's going to be Danny Gargan, according to what he says. He's going to go from the 12 post position. So we'll see how that works out on Saturday. But it was uh, a a very well-attended draw last night downtown.
Yeah, and I discussed, in fact, you mentioned that, and I just came off of a conversation with Sid Fernando, mostly on the pedigree side of things, but we did hit on where the speed's going to come from and how everybody figures to line up early, and it's notable how much of the, you know, drop-back types are inside with Owendale and Code of Honor and Laughing Fox and Everfast. I mean, four of the first five posts are populated by horses that you know, typically are going to be in the second half of the field. So there will be room inside for horses to draft down, and it'll be very interesting to see, you know, who drops over and how quickly that happens, because Errat Ortiz, it's hard to envision him not. I mean, if he can only be in the three path around the turn, that would be, I think, an accomplishment. I imagine, you know, before, you know, he tries to cross over, because there's going to be horses just in their natural, you know, interest of gaining position, Seth, that are going to be in his way. So unless they quarter horse it out and he gets the lead, you know, in the first four or five jumps and can dive down to the two path, he's going to lose ground. I don't see how he doesn't.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, post position in this race is not necessarily as important as the Derby, because the Derby, that one, is obviously just based on the configuration of the track, is kind of funky. And then 18, 19, and 20, obviously 18, 19, and 20. 1 to 12, and you got the long run up the stretch, they can sort themselves out. But as we're kind of alluding to, if there's not a lot of speed, these horses maybe don't string themselves out quite the way that will set up to get in good position into the first turn. So that first run down the stretch is going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
Now, you got any early, you know, and I know that, like me, you haven't been able to see a PP set, you know, with I like to see them, you know, lined up on the page, but who were you thinking about going into the draw?
I'm thinking and still thinking about Owendale. I think, you know, obviously Tacitus is the horse to beat. This is a horse that has hit the board in a couple of Triple Crown races, and I think that's enough to kind of give a little bit of a class edge and attract the attention. But he's hit the board. He hasn't won. He had the trouble last time, and maybe he would have won, but he didn't win. And so there are question marks, as really there are for all of the three-year-olds once you get past Maximum Security. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe a race to play around a little bit. And I liked Owendale in the Preakness. He ran well. He got the little win last time. I just think, yeah, it might be interesting coming up from Kentucky for Brad Cox. So early on, you know, I reserved the right to switch up a little bit, but I'm kind of tilting towards Owendale at this point.
Interesting. Brad Cox, very happy with the way he's progressed. He did feel like one of those horses that got involved, you know, into the three-year-old scene a little late, had the good effort in Baltimore, and, you know, subsequently, you know, added to the resume, you know, with some of the provincial performance opportunities. So I also, you know, I was there out at Oaklawn, you know, when he flashed the first indication that he was going to be a horse to reckon with and to watch. So it's a fun, you know, it's a fun ownership group, and they'll be out in force and be quite excited again. I was around them in Baltimore, and they were bouncing off the walls, Team Owendale. So I'm sure that Saturday will be no different. You know, by the way, speaking of ownership groups, and I mentioned it in passing yesterday, and I didn't really poke around and see articles, but Seth, the retirement of Warriors Club yesterday that Gary Palmisano from Churchill announced, and what an amazing story, and what a job by Lucas, you know, with a horse that, you know, when that whole concept was announced, you know, I was certainly familiar because of what we did with DT, but on a basis of you know, the racetracks doing it, I mean, the chances of them catching a horse like this and then Lucas getting every possible, you know, opportunity and success out of him and making people, you know, so happy. And what he, not only did that horse make the people in the Churchill Downs Racing Club ecstatic and, you know, bring them places they never expected to go, you know, aside from the Churchill Winner's Circle, it changed the landscape because virtually every region now is, and racetrack organization has introduced their own racing club. So it really changed the game to some degree. I mean, on a certain level.
Yeah, their game plan was, the sport needs fresh blood, new owners, more owners. And their game plan was, here's an easy way, a completely inexpensive way to let people kind of jump in and experience ownership. And they hit a home run. I mean, you said it. It's kind of lightning in a bottle. Will that happen again? I don't know. But it opened the door to, again, other places doing it as well. They were so successful. That horse, you know, is racing at maybe not the top level, but a pretty high level of racing and being very, very competitive. So it was a lot of fun for all the people involved. You would have to think that they will have accomplished what they wanted to and bring in some new owners off of that. But again, it happened in such a high-profile way, given the talent of the horse, that other jurisdictions jumped in and did the same thing. And you would have to think, they likely will not get that same lightning in the bottle. Maybe it'll happen. Hopefully it does. But even without it, that they started it at other places gives other people the opportunity to jump in and just participate. And I think they'll, just with the participation level, have a lot of fun. I know watching you and the folks that have been part of DT over the years going into the Winner's Circle up here at Saratoga certainly was a lot of fun in past years, but just going into the paddock and seeing some of the players you've had as part of your team in the years, folks have a lot of fun just participating and being able to go in the paddock, go to the backstretch and pet the horse and whatnot, and I think that'll play out at these other jurisdictions. But it's all based on just, yeah, the fluky success of the Churchill Club.
You know, and they're shopping him for a stud deal. He's a son of Warrior's Reward, and you know, it's one thing to get a horse that wins a couple of races. It's going to be quite another. And they could not have imagined that they would have a horse to start this thing that ends up, you know, ending up at stud, and the loyalty that this is going to engender, and virtually everybody and you know, the photos were 100 people. They had to take the picture out on the racetrack invariably because there were so many people, and you know, they're going to follow every, you know, all the progeny and so forth. And you know, even though it's untimely, because you know, the hope was that he was going to run this weekend, and they unfortunately, you know, had an issue, but he's going to get the jump on. And I'm trying to think. I want to say Firenze. I can't remember now. Is it Poseidon's? Is he a Poseidon's Warrior or a Warrior's Reward? Firenze Fire. Let me quickly look him up, because I think if I'm not mistaken, he's also, right? Is he a Warriors or is he a Poseidon? Here we go. I'll tell you what. He is a Poseidon's Warrior. Okay. I wasn't sure. I you know, because as a Warrior's Reward, I wondered if, you know, if he was getting the jump, Warriors Club, on a stud deal, you know, that, but Firenze Fire is a, he's a Poseidon's Warrior. So they just share the warrior name, not the stallion. Anyway, so the fact that they're going to get a stud deal for him is just remarkable, and that people who put in $500 are going to end up, you know, getting an annuity out of this is astounding.
Yeah, it was a fun idea to begin with, and again, just they step in and get lightning in the bottle makes it congratulations to everybody involved. Not just the people who kind of jumped in and picked up a share, but the people who came up with the idea.
Well, Seth, let me get a couple of opinions and thoughts here as well. Some thoughts about the past weekend and Alabama Day. Did you and I, we talked about the photograph and the crazy dark, weird, you know, scenario when it came to the Lake Placid. Any other takes coming away from the weekend?
Well, I mean, the 3-0 Philly scene, which throughout the year, but much like the boys, other than maximum security, I think now as we've gone through the summer with the Haskell, has kind of stepped to the head of the class. But the 3-0 Philly scene was much the same. Coming into the summer, I think Guana, with the win in the coaching club American Oaks, kind of moved to the head of the class. But then Dunbar Road, now Chad has 1-2, or, you know, I guess 1-2, and you could debate which way. But I think he has the top two Phillies. It'll be interesting to see where they go over the next couple of months. I think they'll sort it out between those two, I would have to think. But with Dunbar Road winning the Alabama, she stepped firmly into that discussion. It was a nice performance by her. And again, what has been part of a freakish weather summer up here after the situation in the Lake Placid. And for folks who weren't on track, I was downstairs in the clubhouse, and it was the running of the Lake Placid that dark clouds came in, and they kind of hurried things up a little bit, and they ran the race, and it didn't rain during the race. Although when I was watching the race, I looked out in the back of the grandstand, and it seemed to be raining out beyond in back of the grandstand, but it wasn't raining out on the course until after the race was over. Then it came down, and at that point, people flowed into the inside of the facility, and I was downstairs in the clubhouse. Graham Motion and Chad Brown came in underneath and were surrounded by reporters. Chad walked by and said, "See the photo? Nobody can tell." And he was smiling, and I think they realized, given the situation with the photo, that that was the decision that had to be made. And they were interviewed. But while the judges were looking at the photo, the monitors in the downstairs of the clubhouse were replaying the finish over and over again. And with that ding-dong head bob back and forth, every time they showed it, there was that typical, oh, oh. And then when it was finally announced and when the photo popped up, that downstairs of the clubhouse was just wall-to-wall people, and it was electric. And as I say, then everybody kind of crowded around Graham and Chad as they had to have come in to be underneath because you couldn't do the – normally the interviews happen out in the winner's circle, but it was boring. So people were crowded around there, and it was just it was electric from that point right through the Alabama and the entire facility. I mean, that just – it was a situation that you can feel how you want to feel about it with the photo and the no lights and whatnot. But, again, it was a Saratoga moment. And I had Joe Clancy on this morning. We're talking about it. And I said, it's one of those Saratoga moments that 5 or 10 years from now people will still be talking about. Remember the Lake Placid where they couldn't see the photo? And that was kind of the feel you got from the crowd. They were just – it was one of those kind of fluky things that just made for a fun and different day normally, but I guess at Saratoga, different days are kind of normal.
Exactly. And one of the things that's so different about the game in general, and that, you know, we tend to, you know, as media members, we don't think about it, but for the general public, I mean, just that scene you describe, and whether the weather's good or bad, but, you know, there's that TV, you know, in the main area of the clubhouse, that bank of televisions, including the big screens and the tote boards, where, you know, trainers invariably are watching warm-ups. They might go upstairs later and watch the race live from a box or something, but, you know, a lot of them watch it right there. And the ability of the horse players and the casual fans to interact with everybody and to interact with, you know, with owners and to interact with trainers and officials, that's something that doesn't exist anywhere else. And this sort of brings it full circle, Seth, to what we opened with. And when I brought up the jockey introductions, it's one of the areas that I guess we take for granted, and we don't necessarily merchandise it and you know, advertise it as one of the game's strengths and appeals. I mean, what major league manager or NFL coach or whatever are you able to, you know, stand with and, you know, watch replays and you know, ask about a horse or, you know, a horse from yesteryear, if that's the case, or just, you know, just wish them well. The same thing with the jocks. I mean, the ability of our, you know, of our horse playing and fan base to interact with the principals, it's unique. There's no other sport that has that.
You know, it's funny, as you're saying, you mentioned take for granted. I started to think, I think you're absolutely right, because that big TV in the bottom floor of the clubhouse is where I watch most of the stakes from. And as soon as the race is over, then I'll head out to the winner's circle for the post-race interviews and whatnot. But I typically watch from there, and it is not unusual at all. I would say it's more often than not, there are some of the trainers and there are some of the owners sitting and watching that big watching the big TV.
Yep.
Up at the stakes races, the bottom floor of the clubhouse. And I think you're right. As you said it, I thought, I do kind of take it for granted, because I'll sit there, the West Point guys, I'll talk to Tommy Bellhouse or Terry Finley before their horse enters the gate. Kieran, a lot of times, will be in that area watching. I'm trying to think who I've seen over the last, this past weekend. There was certainly some trainers that were standing there watching the stakes races. And it's not unusual at all, and I think you're right. You know, we do kind of take it for granted, and maybe it's something we should evangelize a little more, that people realize how accessible they are, not just around the facility and whatnot, but right before a stakes race. They're there watching with the rest of the fans.
Yeah, and I there's obviously lots of different things to merchandise with the sport, and, you know, various departments or industry organs do what they can. You know, they're collectively, you know, those that are critical of industry initiatives, they seem to, you know, be dedicated to criticizing anything and everything. But this is an area that this is not the first time I've evangelized this topic, but all you got to do is look at the trainer autograph session on Sunday, and the jockey autograph session, and how enthralled people are, how they, you know, the you know, it's old, they know it's only an hour, and that the time is limited, but they line up, you know, so deep. I mean, we should be exploiting this more, and you know, banging this drum more. And of course, the other part of it that I don't understand, I continue not to understand, is how we don't, as an industry, more aggressively court the Latin community. It's incredible that we have all these Latin American stars, and that the backbone of our workforce is Latino, and there's only a couple of racetracks, Naira included, that is broadcasting fully in Spanish and making any effort to bring in, you know, that horse player and fan base. It's almost insulting, actually, that there isn't more of a widespread initiative on this front. With all the industry, let me ask you, what is the Spanish market industry organ, Seth, that courts this community?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I will reiterate, though, and hats off to Naira, because they do have the Spanish.
Oh, for years.
Gulfstream has added a Spanish side,
yep,
to things, too. So, I mean, hats off to the tracks that are doing something in that area.
Yeah, it's doesn't make any sense. I mean, and we've got members from virtually, you know, almost every South American and Central American, and in a lot of cases island nations, we've got representatives, and, you know, what that could translate to in terms of horseplay, handle contribution, attendance, and every other quantifiable area.
Oh,
God knows.
the Clásico de Caribe down in down at Gulfstream. Yep. You just get a sense of what it could be when you watch that day and the pageantry and the excitement down there.
Yep. No. All right. Let's turn to some action and off the turf entirely today. Have you been playing any Empire Six? That it feels like it's something that you would take an interest in. Did you play on Sunday for the distribution?
I definitely played on Sunday, and I had played either Saturday or Friday. That was kind of the first time I jumped in, because typically the rainbow down at Gulfstream, I jump in when the carryover starts to get to the half a million, because then you can get a consolation with a fairly logical ticket that'll pay $600 or $800 or $1,000. And so I wasn't really playing early on up here until I started to look at the payoffs were okay for, again, what were some logical kind of sequences. So I jumped in, like I say, either Friday or Saturday. Then I definitely jumped in on Sunday. Sunday, I had my own ticket, but I had $250 to play for some OTV patrons. And I got through the first three legs, which included a couple decent little double-digit horses, I mean, in the teens. And then I was 4 by 4 by 4, and I thought, I'm in pretty good shape. And I ran second in the fourth leg by half a length. And I was kind of despondent because now, again, I'm 4 by 4, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to hit the rest. And so, sure enough, I hit the fifth leg. And then the sixth leg. Sixth leg, if you remember, was a much scratch-reduced field, scratched down to 5. I had 4 of them, and I didn't win the race. So at that point, I was happy I lost earlier, because if I had gotten to that leg and that had happened, I would have been on suicide watch.
Hey, we talked about it a little bit the other day with Johnny, and my friend Steve Carlin hit, and Steve did it, you know, the very clever. I mean, the 20 cent is the component of this, and I've been in a quandary for years over this concept. You and I have discussed it many, many times, and we've discussed it with Paul Matisse and with Maury Wolfe and so on and so forth. I mean, people who are really among the best players in the game. And it's such a weird dynamic. It on paper, the optics of it are just awful. I mean, with this two-tiered takeout structure that makes it, you know, just a ridiculous equation. But then there's the players that are serious players that are just going after the daily prize, and then, you know, down the road when there's a force out, they'll play appropriately when there's a force out. I only play when there's a force out, and you know that. I struggle with this, and people have heard me for years be so torn about, you know, whether this has been a terribly negative influence on the game or not. It's such a tough equation to figure. But my friend Steve, I love what he did, which was hit a bunch of all buttons and then play the two singles that felt the most, you know, the most available as singles, and he got through, and his ticket was a little under 250, and he is rewarded with a $12,000 500 payoff.
Yeah, and you know, kind of 2020 vision, what Blue Prize, I think it was potential single. I went deep in that race, and out deep, I went four deep in that race, and I probably could have singled there and maybe had a little bit more in the ones that I missed. But I didn't regret it, because I thought, you know, I like Blue Prize, but the ticket could blow up, and Blue Prize only won by about half a length. So I still look back at the ticket and think, I made the right decision. It just didn't fall my way.
Well, and that, you know, that's the right, obviously that's the attitude that you have to take. And, you know, when it on a $2 pick six or this 20 cent variety. But I'm just looking here too. I think he singled Mrs. Danvers of Shug's.
Oh, I had her underneath. I couldn't single. I had the one that beat her the last time.
The Pleasure Purser?
No, there was a horse that had beaten Mrs. Danvers in there, right?
Finite. The re-ride sibling.
I had them one too, but I had Finite on top, so I couldn't have pulled a single there.
Now he's single. Then he hit the all button in that seventh with the five horse field. You know, the race that we ran in, I had this discussion with Andy, the off the turf eighth race with Carlisle Bell. How Jen Emily, how she goes off at 6-1. We talk about value in these off the turf races. She was lone speed. You didn't have to be Tom Brohammer to see that if Jen Emily wanted the lead, she was going to get it. And going seven furlongs, lone speed is money. So how she goes off at 6-1 is a mystery to me. But all right, Blue Prize, the other single, and then the Nightcap. I know a lot of people said, "Oh, Love and Love is a mystery horse." Maybe, I guess. But if you hit the all button, which is what I know my man did.
Yeah, you're only five deep.
Yeah, it's five. You know, two races with five horses, and you go hit the all button in both of them. So
yeah. And looking back, that, you know, as I say, I went four deep in that race and the one I didn't have beat me. But I like the angle. State bred allowance into an open claimer, it's an angle I always like. I just, the state bred allowance just was a little dicey to me to pull the trigger. But, there was some things you could have tilted towards there.
Well, let's... We got a couple of minutes. You got anything today off the turf and sloppy? What you got any good ideas?
Yeah, given the situation, you don't know what's going to happen. But there is one in the fifth, and I haven't seen scratches yet because I was having trouble making connections to the internet. But in the fifth race, I went 8-7-2-10. I think the seven is going to take the action. Jewel of Arabia for Clement debuted in the stakes race, ran a good third, even money on the morning line. Can't argue. I think this is the horse to beat, but never heard of her. Constitution off to a pretty good start with first-time starters.
Yeah. So
Constitution on top. And the dam produced a sibling called Broken Sword that won its career debut, little five-and-a-half stakes race. Now, it was at Pleasanton back in 2012, but again, I thought there was a little win early breeding here, 15-1. I'll take a little shot with Never Heard of Her in the fifth.
The only horse I think that's affecting there that scratched from the fifth is the 10.
All right, so I'm 8-7-2 now.
8-7-2, that works. All right. And I'm just looking also, I talked earlier, I told everybody about the stake, and in the John's Call, you can take out Pillar Mountain, Nakamura, and ProQuester. The 4, 6, and 7 come out. So that leaves the 1, 2, 3, and 5. So four-horse group in the John's Call. Got time for one more push.
Sixth race, did the 7 stay in?
The sixth race, I can tell you the 7 did stay in. Only one scratch, and that is the 2 came out, Montana Man.
Yeah, I had it 7-2-6-1 on the turf, and I said when I handicapped this morning, I was going to leave them the same on the dirt. It's one of those kind of 2-year-old races. And Flute Maker debuted on the dirt down at Ellis, broke slowly, went up at 4-1 that day, so took some money. By Sky Mesa, that's a win early sire. I think the Kenny McPeak horse may improve in the second start. Jose Ortiz on board. So number 7 for me, Flute Maker in race 6.
Excellent. Well, and Seth, I'm in connection here with Randy Hill, and he's going to be on with us tomorrow. He's got at least 3 horses between Tax and then in the – he's also involved in the – he's involved either in the Boston. No, in the. He's in the. Whatchamacallit? The other stake.
Fargo?
No, in the on the. He might have a. No, he's got Come Dancing. He's got in the Ballerina. He's got the Sword Dance. He's got somebody in the Sword Dancer, and of course he's got Tax. So he's going to be on with us, and. He's volunteering for a visit with you.
Oh, well, okay. Okay. All right.
Tomorrow or Friday. So you want to.
All right. All right.
He is always fun.
He is always fun.
He's certainly, you know.
They were heckling. They were heckling yesterday from the crowd, in fact. Heckling Andy at one point.
The Reeves and Randy Hill?
Yeah, there was first Gargan yelled something, and then Andy said something back, and then Randy said, "Hey, we're backing up Danny."
Well, Gargan's been a little bit of a maniac. Truth be told, that's a whole separate topic. I will mention, Seth, by way of it's not a delayed thank you because I certainly said thank you at the time. It's 10 years ago today that my mother passed. And, of course, you stepped in so willingly and ably. And were we a morning show then or were we still on the afternoons?
It was in the afternoon because I can remember. I only remember the one, but I remember Karen Johnson sitting in with me. And, yeah, we were back on the patio behind the barbecue. And it was the afternoon because I can remember a crowd around us.
Nice. I couldn't remember if we had made the transition yet, but it's, boy, miss her every day. But you were unbelievable to step in, and I couldn't force it on you this year because of the schedules conflict. But people
at one point I was going to offer if you just wanted to kind of co-broadcast, but I don't know timing wise it wouldn't work because we're a little more fluid with our commercials.
Well, it just. Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. If it's slapping the show on that's an interesting idea. That might. All right. If the next time I lose an eye, Seth Merrow, everybody, I love it. Seth and I on Sunday. Lenny Shulman will be with us on Sunday after Travers, and obviously some other weekend, notables will join us today. Seth and Sid. John Mazza, who was just unbelievable, and Sean Clancy. HRRN coverage picks up at 3 o'clock here on the network midweek, and of course the Saturday card is going to be drawn later this afternoon. I'd say probably an overnight by about 3:30 maybe. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you in the morning. I got to go to Bennington, get a haircut. Talk to you tomorrow.